Today's episode, the NCAA messed with Tennessee. Tennessee messed right back. What it means for the future of college athletics. It's a doozy. Plus, just a heck of a confrontation on an American Airlines flight. You're going to want to hear this.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
The whole thing's a waste of time. You're just chasing your tail around. Your town is overrun with meth, and you set up a speed trap to catch the tourists at $75 tickets.
Russ Dellinger.
Look, it's just been a really complicated 2.5 years of murky NIL guidance, ever-changing and evolving landscape. And it makes very difficult the NCAA to apply and punish anybody.
And SI's Pat Forty.
I would go beyond even like a professional model. If like that's the NCAA's answer, I would remove football from higher education.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. Start with a poem.
A poem?
Once two strangers climbed old Rocky Top, looking for a moonshine still. Strangers ain't come down from Rocky Top. Reckon they never will. The fight song of the University of Tennessee includes the likely murder of two federal agents, a.k.a. strangers, who went looking for moonshine to bust the moonshine operation because corn won't grow at all on Rocky Top. Dirt's too rocky by far. That's why all the folks on Rocky Top get their corn from a jar. They kill the federal agents in the song. I think they pretty much have told you their intentions.
Yeah, look out, NCAA enforcement.
F around, find out. NCAA enforcement keeps trying to find out. The NCAA, per our Pat Forty, is investigating Tennessee again. This one for NIL violations as well, the basic thing. We'll get Pat do the details. This just months after they all agreed on an 18 level one violations, over 200 individual rule breakings that Tennessee admitted to in an effort to fire Jeremy Pruitt for cause. When it was to their benefit, they were good with the strangers.
Yeah.
When it is not, you ain't coming down from Rocky Top. The chancellor fought back on Tuesday. The attorney general of Tennessee, and he got his buddies across the hills there from Virginia to join in, flat out sued the NCAA, said, yeah, you can't enforce these NIL rules, even though we didn't break them. Pat, what's going on?
Oh, a lot is going on. A lot. So, yeah, Tennessee, fresh on the heels of being fortunate to avoid a postseason ban, which would have kept it out of the Cheez-It Bowl, right? And might have allowed Iowa to even score if they'd played someone else in that bowl game. But they avoided a ban for last season because the NCAA gave them credit for exemplary cooperation and tacitly is trying to get out of the business of postseason bans. But lo and behold, there's another case now on the heels of one that the Committee on Infractions said was, quote unquote, one of the worst it had ever seen. Now we have an investigation of, impermissible NIL benefits to athletes in multiple sports. Not sure how many, but this was classified. This case was characterized to me by different people as, quote unquote, major, quote unquote, big. So this is not a small deal, and the timing is especially potentially problematic for Tennessee. since they are in the repeat violator zone, very, very freshly into the repeat violator zone, which can enhance the penalties. The big question is, can the NCAA actually enforce its own NIL rules? So far, the answer has largely been no. And as you alluded to, Dan, here, whether it's murdering federal agents, murdering NCAA investigators on a hilltop, or whether it's just absolutely attacking them in the court of public opinion, that's the approach. Nobody is scared of the NCAA anymore. And Tennessee is fighting back very publicly and very strenuously. Not only the attorney general, the governor weighed in on Twitter supporting the UT chancellor as well. So this is going to be, in the words of one fairly informed person on this, going to be a firefight of epic proportion. And we as a podcast are here for it.
We are. I remember when the previous Tennessee case was ongoing. And the NCAA had on the table the postseason ban. And, I think that the university was close to getting all involved in the state to help with a legal approach if that were to continue. And they had the hearing and, the postseason ban was taken off the table. And so we didn't get to this point. But we are, with this case, obviously to that point. Tennessee's got everybody in the state, like Pat said, the governor, the attorney general, to come out and file suits and in support of the university. You know, it's just it's another NCAA rule being challenged by the courts, being challenged by a member school that in a lot of ways helped create the rules. And in now being challenged by the court because, the NCAA, as the courts have said now for years, right, is running an illegal operation. That's how the courts view it. And this is just another one, right? We've had, ongoing right now, we have the lawsuit against the transfer policy. We have the lawsuit for retroactive NIL and Alston payments. We have the lawsuit that athletes should get a cut of the TV revenue. And we have multiple complaints and lawsuits that would make athletes employees. But it's just about as chaotic of a situation in the landscape of college athletics that I think we've ever seen. When this lawsuit, this temporary restraining order is granted, athletes will be able to, recruits will be able to sign NIL deals, before they sign with schools. And right now, as it stands right now, college athletes can transfer an unlimited amount of times because of the restraining order in the previous transfer case. And soon they may be ruled employees. And soon schools may owe $3+ billion in retroactive NIL. So all of these things are coming together to what I would say is going to trigger significant change. There already has been a lot of change, obviously, but all of these things are going to contribute to real, real significant change coming probably sooner rather than later. And this Tennessee case is, just another example of that, another kind of straw on the camel's back.
All right, well, we'll get to the courts, legislation, Congress, because this is where it's all headed. But let's go micro for now. The NCAA, Pat, did not name Nico?
No, the NCAA has not filed a formal notice of allegations yet. So, this is how they do things. They often filed draft notices, which pretty well lays out what a school is facing.
And present it to the school, right, Pat?
And present it to the school. I think. Yes, yeah. Yes. And I mean, there's multiple ways around it. You can send it to the outside counsel so that the school can say, we haven't received it, and thus you can't FOI it and get it for them. You can lay it out more verbally. You can call it a draft notice. You can say, you can do a lot of different things. But so they have not formally charged anyone.
Okay, well, so let's say there was a quarterback.
Tennessee knows what they're facing.
Let's say there was a quarterback from California named Rico. We'll throw a couple more in there, right? Some guy named Rico is from California, five-star quarterback, and he just happened to commit to, and is now a fresh player. He's already done a freshman. He's going into his sophomore year. He's going to be the starter for the Tennessee Vols, and he came from, and there was a lot of talk. He had this deal, Spire Sports. Would it be similar to that type of a case? A Rico, not a Nico, a Rico.
It would be.
Okay. So
maybe even Chico, either one.
Anybody. Yeah. Or it could be Rick. It could be Nick, whatever. Just hypothetically imagine a five-star quarterback from California entered into agreement with a collective that is associated with based in Knoxville, Tennessee. Yeah, it's kind of associated with Tennessee. I don't know. Who knows? Who can say? Right. And he just happens to agree to this deal. And there's about a contract. And it's supposed to be $5 million and all this stuff. And you can get paid while you're still in high school. Just hypothetically imagine that that was the case. And the NCAA said, we're not into that. That would be pretty much the case, right?
Yes. So that your hypothetical collective entered into agreements with
hypothetical
multiple
player.
Athletes in multiple sports, but most notably, a five-star quarterback of some name. Yeah.
Some guy named Nick from California. Okay. So we've all known about this case. And obviously, the beauty of it was I've seen two early defenses on this from the school. And then I have some from lawyer extraordinaire Tom Mars, the Arkansas lawyer who gets in the middle of these things when he's not a Goliath grouper fishing off of Boynton Beach. When he has a spare moment, he's usually suing the NCAA. Anyway, in this case, the NCAA is saying, look, Tennessee is saying, the NCAA is charging Tennessee when nobody employed by Tennessee broke any rules. Well, no, this is this other operation. Who can say what they do? Who can say? We don't know. We're not responsible for every business in Knoxville, Tennessee. And so you're charging people that aren't affiliated with us, A. B, the rules, the guidance, guardrails, if you will, that you put in place later were not in place when this agreement between this just unknown rando company here in Knoxville and this guy named Nick out in California just happened to come together. That is the school's defense, right?
That's the defense.
Okay. And then further, I have this. I'm going to read this from our fisherman friend here. Because he wanted this on the record, I say.
Oh, yeah.
He says he puts this, this is the funny part. As long as the NCAA has been investigating UT, the enforcement staff didn't even know until last week that Spire Sports, which Mr. Mars is representing, and Nico, I don't even know who this Nico could be, had entered into a representation agreement in early 2022 before the NCAA rules announced NIL rules they intend to enforce. So he's basically saying the enforcement staff went barrel ahead, didn't even know the facts of the case. They got an alibi, basically.
Mm-hmm.
If the NCAA were smart, they'd abandon the Tennessee investigation. But I suspect they'll keep sticking their head in the propeller until they draw another lawsuit or two challenging the UT investigation on other legal grounds. Just a hunch.
Yes. The same counselor, Tom Mars, told me that he does anticipate more suits in the coming days. So,
all right. So I'm going to backtrack. I believe it is quite fair to say that this whole thing was a absolute rush through the loophole and blatant violation of what everyone thought the NIL guidelines were going to suggest. The spirit of whatever rules there were or were going to be were completely violated by Tennessee, Spire Sports, everything. I don't think we're really saying a whole lot here.
Yeah.
But if there weren't any rules, what are you going to do? What's the NCAA say about that?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think you are correct. That's where rubber meets road of, I mean, if you go to the Spire Sports Group website, the top, it says, work with us, highlights events, join the volunteer club. oh, there might be an affiliation there with the University of Tennessee. You click on that, you go to the Volunteer Club website, and lo and behold, there's Hunter Bedour, who's the head of Spire Sports, at the beginning of all of their broadcast slash podcast shows, talking to the host about events that's going on to support Tennessee. So I think there's a connection there. And perhaps bringing Rick, Nick, Chico on a plane to Knoxville might be considered a recruiting inducement as opposed to just simply wanting to represent him in his professional future. So, yeah, look, the intent is there. But you're correct that what exactly were the rules? What exactly are the rules? Has anyone followed the rules? The trying to stuff this 900-pound genie back into a small bottle is incredibly difficult, and that's what the NCAA is trying to do. And with the urging of all the members, it was like, we've got to stop all these pay-for-play. We got to stop the transfer. We got to stop buying players in the transfer portal. Okay, enforces this. All right, we'll try to do it. Here's what we got. Now, but he's like, whoa, you can't enforce those rules. That's the catch-22 here.
Yep, that's been like the years-long predicament that the NCAA is in, right? Its member schools are voting and adopting and creating rules, and the NCAA's job is to enforce those rules. And once it enforces those rules, often the member schools, the same schools that were helping create the rules, push back or sue the NCAA for enforcing the rules they made. And that is a real problem, but it's probably part of the grander issue, which is the NCAA is too big of a collection of schools, and it needs to be a smaller group of schools to make rules that maybe make sense for them. And that's really the crux of this. You know, the Spire Sports Group, you know, likes, they contend that, you know, they're a marketing agency that runs, obviously manages the collective. I spent 2 days with them about a year and a half ago in New York City, where at the time they brought Hendon Hooker and I think a receiver to do to meet with people, you know, marketers, brands, to meet with big brands in New York City. And I did kind of a profile on the Spire Sports Group. I mean, they are about as aggressive, I think you could say, as any collective in the country or any manager of a collective in the country. In they certainly have a clear and obvious attachment. I don't think they move away. I don't think they try to avoid it to Tennessee. I mean, they have a staffer who used to work in the Tennessee Athletic Department. There obviously is a connection there, but schools have been saying since day one, as the NCAA has started over the course of the last 2 years, clarify all these guidelines. They continue to come out every 3 to 4 months with a clarity of their NIL guidelines. And there's been a pushback on school administrators to some of those clarifications, including one that says at one point you want us to not be involved with our school collective at all. But yet, if our school collective breaks certain rules, then we hold the responsibility and the punishment. Is that fair? And you see recently rules have started to change to allow schools to have more communication and relationship with their collective. So look, it's just been a really complicated 2.5 years of murky NIL guidance, ever-changing and evolving landscape. And it makes very difficult the NCAA to apply and punish anybody for these things, because it's so murky. Now, I will say the Florida State case probably is a little different in that they had evidence that a school employee, a coach, drove the athlete, the prospect who was a transfer, to a meeting with a collective. Of course, according to new clarification of rules, that would never be illegal to drive a prospect over to a collective, but to drive an athlete over to meet with the collective now is legal, according to the new rules. So again, things do continue to change. I think from the NCAA standpoint, one thing that hasn't changed, they will say, is you can't induce and you can't tamper, and you've never been able to, and that's what they're pointing to. You know, you can't do those things. Of course, Dan would probably say, why can't you?
Oh, I always do, yeah. I just like the Florida State thing is all on based on, like, you just called them a $6 Uber. I mean, how long you drive all the way across Tallahassee in, like, 5 minutes? I mean, yeah, like, what do we – oh, man.
Bus you and I did drive across Tallahassee one time.
We've
on
done a few times, I think, right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
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 So, like, when it first started, NIL hit. Remember, it was, like, midnight. It was, like, some summer night and, like, those the Cavender
July
twins
1,
already
2021.
Had a, they were had a deal at 12:01:01, and you know, I was like, what's going on? And some schools are like, we're not doing this because we're not sure what's going to happen. They were cautious schools.
Yes.
And it was a lot of like Ohio State, Michigan, Notre Dame, very cautious, the kind of more old school ADs. They're like, I don't know. It's, we don't want to jump in. That's going to be a violation. We're going to sort. Tennessee just like, they just went charging ass in. They were like, let's go, right?
Yeah.
We'll take the false start. We'll risk it. We're going to time that. We're going to try to, it's the old.
Snap. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Leap the kick. And
Tennessee, A&M, Miami.
Yeah. Our favorite Renegades. Our favorite Renegades just were like, hey, man, doesn't say you can't do this. I read that law and it don't say this. Well, it's going to. We'll see. Now, I don't know whether Tennessee is going to get nailed on this or not. My guess is they are not. I think they're probably going to be able to get away with this. But I, again, in the spirit of the rule that came out later, I think we know what happened here. This will get parsed down, but I think I know what happened. And this could be a massive thing. I mean, if the NCAA, wanted, they could death penalty Tennessee.
Yeah, that's the thing, is if they could actually prove the violations and get a committee on infractions to agree with it, then the penalties could be massive here. But we are a long way from those things happening.
I don't suspect that will happen, but it is repeat violator. It was 6 months ago.
Yeah.
And it says prohibition on all outside competition in the sports involved in the latest major violation for one or two sports seasons, prohibition of all coaching staff members in the sports from involvement directly or indirectly in coaching activities, the elimination of all grant and aids and all recruiting activities in the sports involved in the latest major infractions. I mean, these are the top two penalties for a repeat violator case. We were talking last one about Michigan. They're going to have to maybe get creative.
Yeah.
You don't have to get creative here.
No.
Right? I don't think they're going to do it. I don't think they have the courage.
Hell no.
I don't think they're
going
to.
No way.
No, but it's laying there. So, like,
yeah.
It's laying there.
I mean, yes.
They are supposed to. Let me put it this way. They're supposed to.
Right?
They won't, but they're supposed to.
No, because the Southeastern Conference and ESPN would absolutely wage war with trying, because you're messing with the TV product then.
Oh yeah, not going to happen. But it's like if we're gonna get down to technicality. So very interesting case.
Yeah, it could. I mean, it could certainly revive interest in the postseason ban. Which, you know, every time you talk to NCAA people, they're like, "No, it's still a penalty. It's still a penalty." And we're like, "Yeah." But in this case, it really could be.
During the course of the last 2 years, just reporting about all these clarification of the NIL guidelines, I remember one of the clarifications noted about, you know, retroactive punishments, you know, going back, I think it was the spring of 2022, the NCAA released a clarification about how they could retroactively punish if you've broken these rules even before the clarification. And lawyers kept telling me that's going to be pretty difficult. And number two, it's going to be difficult in general just to prove in a court of law what if something was a, quote, inducement, right? Proving that it was an inducement. I mean, it's up to interpretation in a lot of ways. And both of these things, these items come down in this case because It's retroactive, right, penalties, potentially, from before clarity was released about the guidelines, number one. And number two, obviously, it's attack or targeting potential inducements by the collective over this quarterback, Nico. And so can they prove that in a court of law that something was inducements? And can you retroactively punish schools for something that they weren't really at the time, especially not involved in with the collective? So I'm with kind of Dan here, right? It would probably shock me if Tennessee actually suffers some serious penalties because of these. And I am assuming, just like the NCAA transfer policy, a judge will grant the temporary restraining order and all athletes across the country prospects and recruits will be able to sign NIL deals before they enroll and get, quote, inducements.
Yeah. So let me get to you got anything else on that, Pat?
Well, I got a lot else on this, but go ahead and go and we'll kind of get to what I'm thinking.
Yeah. So this is an example of what I talk about, why that there should be no guardrails. And I've said all along, they're wasting their time trying to, we need guardrails, we need this rule, we need more rules, we need this, we're that. They're not going to be able to enforce any of them. They're not going to be able to catch people. Everything in life is an inducement. Everything in life is tampering. How do you induce any employee from coming to your thing? How do you induce anything? Just everything's an inducement. They have spent the last 3 years and the last five before it listening to their football coaches and their basketball coaches who they have to stop. These people are high-functioning people who are not, they lack a breadth of experience and intelligence. They're very good at certain things. They can be very smart people, but these are absolutely highly complicated issues. They are very, very important issues. The entire system of college athletics is riding on managing this entire bouncy waters properly. And we're spending way too much time because a coach is upset that he lost a recruit. And they have to stop with the tampering and inducements. So the NCAA is going to waste time, energy, lawyers, money, trying to catch Tennessee on an inducement, and they're going to fail. The whole thing's a waste of time. You're just chasing your tail around. Your town is overrun with meth, and you set up a speed trap to catch the tourists and $75 tickets. It requires real leadership, and somebody's got to tell the coaches to shut up and stand in the corner and collect their check. I don't care if you don't like it. The inducements are happening. There can't be guardrails, and we're going to get to it in this lawsuit. Give it up. I've been yelling at you this forever. No guardrails. No rules. Is there really anything bad that happened in college athletics because a guy named Nico is playing at Tennessee opposed to a guy named Nico playing somewhere else? No. It's not bad. Somebody has to look on the macro and not listen to coaches and on-campus complaints about the small stuff, because this is the perfect example of the utter stupidity of trying to create guardrails and everyone believing there needs to be guardrails. This is a complete waste of time, and all you did was piss off the attorney general in Tennessee and Virginia, and now you got a federal lawsuit that's going to blow you right out of the water. Somebody's got to do this.
Yeah, we'll see who the somebody is. But I almost suspect that the attorneys general of those fine states listen to the podcast, because this is some of what you just said is what's in the lawsuit, specifically from the lawsuit. It's like a coach looking for a new job and freely talking to many different schools, but being unable to negotiate salary until after he's picked one. The NCAA bans the use of NIL contracts as a recruiting inducement, meaning prospective athletes cannot Negotiate NIL agreements before they commit to a member institution. A prospective athlete must commit, enroll, or transfer without understanding the NIL opportunities available at the destination or comparing those opportunities to the ones at competing schools. The NIL recruiting ban limits competition and artificially decreases NIL compensation that college athletes could otherwise obtain in a free market. I think they listen to the pod.
They're just smarter than the people listening to the coaches. Yeah. Again, I'm not saying I want any of this. At some point, you have to step back and go, it's coming.
Right. And I think Ed Ross wrote that basically yesterday.
Yes. And you have to stop with the easy. We need, how many years have we heard about guardrails? They're not, they're not going to work.
No.
They were never going to work. I go back to, I pulled this up to try to get the, some quotes, and they're unbelievable. I almost forgot how good it was. June 21, 2021. Alston case. Supreme Court goes 9-0 on the side of Sean Alston and trying to get his academic award money, right? Academic award money. And Brett Kavanaugh, Justice Kavanaugh, does a concurring opinion that is like when Sean Anderson, our producer, is working as a bouncer sometimes. Sean, I imagine you throw a guy out of the bar and you say, if you come back, I'm really going to kick your ass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Naturally.
Naturally. I'm nice now. Just leave the bar. You show back up here, I'm kicking your ass. And now, if you, I reread this thing. I can't even, I would take 5 minutes. You could read the whole thing, but like, you know, specifically, the NCAA states colleges may decline to pay student athletes because the defining features of college sports, according to the NCAA, is that student athletes are not paid. In my view, that argument is circular and unpersuasive. The NCAA couches its argument for paying, not paying student athletes in innocuous labels. The labels cannot disguise reality. The NCAA's business model will be flatly illegal in almost any other industry in America. All the restaurants in a region cannot come together and cut cooks' wages on the theory that customers prefer to eat food from low-paid cooks. I mean, it gets to the end. It turns out some or all of the NCAA's remaining compensation rules violate the antitrust laws. Some difficult policy and practical questions would undoubtedly ensue. Among them, how would paying greater compensation to student athletes affect non-revenue raising sports? Could student athletes in some sports but not others receive compensation? How would any compensation regime comply with Title IX? If paying student athletes requires something like a salary cap in some sports in order to preserve competitive balance, how would that cap be administered? And given there are about 180,000 Division I athletes, what is a financially sustainable way of fairly compensating some or all of those athletes? Kavanaugh lays out the four or five questions here that they should have focused on. Because then right after he says, under ordinary principles of antitrust law, it is not evident why college sports should be any different. The NCAA is not above the law. It doesn't matter what you want. It doesn't matter what some old school coach is complaining about, how he can't teach value or hard work in a portal. Brett Kavanaugh is going to decide this thing. And he made it abundantly clear what he's going to decide. And rather than react to the most important person in the country who's going to decide everything and saying, that's his opinion, maybe we should follow his guidance, they all sat there and said, well, screw that guy. He doesn't understand. It doesn't matter what I want, you want, fans want, what it used to be. Doesn't matter how Woody Hayes would have done it. Doesn't matter. Brett Kavanaugh's in charge of this thing.
Right. And frankly, what it's ultimately going to be, and again, like Ross said, that probably the smart thing to do is to just jump in and embrace the professional model. But, and then it's, look, it's going to be up to people to vote with their own feet. I don't like it. I don't want to be part of it as a coach, as a fan, whatever, or embrace it, one or the other. I was thinking about it, I mean, this morning. I would go beyond even like a professional model. If like that's the NCAA's answer, I would remove football from higher education. I would make it a licensing agreement with the schools wherein the school can charge them rent and a lot of it to use the stadiums. They can charge them rent or a fee and a lot of it to license the logos and the nickname, but say, you know what? You're not part of the college. Okay. You are Crimson Tide Incorporated. You are Volunteers Incorporated. You're whatever. But I think that would be, that's the cleanest break and the easiest break. Now, no, I shouldn't say it's easy, but that's the cleanest break. And I think we're at a point where you might as well just go all the way.
Yeah. I mean, I agree that in a lot of ways is probably the cleanest and most sensible solution, but it's probably also the solution that athletic administrators and university administrators, presidents themselves who would make that decision, would push back against most, right, is breaking from the academic higher education model. That would create a lot of pushback. So if you want to keep it all together, another solution, I think, is probably a more, I guess, going a little farther than what Charlie Baker released in his proposal, his Project D1. It would be going a little further than that, than maybe a new subdivision with the highest revenue producing schools. But it would be something in that vein to split off the highest revenue producing schools and have them create a model where they basically directly compensate athletes in some way. And so there's that option as well. I think all these things, I think, as I wrote last week in that story we discussed before the commissioners of the A5 met with Charlie Baker last week in D.C., you know, all these things were discussed. That was a kind of a timely meeting because you have all these things like coming down on college sports. And now this week you have more with these NIL investigations and then more lawsuits. All these things are crashing down. And so everybody, specifically the A5, is trying to find a better solution to create a model that it will be protected from lawsuits, right? From legal challenges, and it will be deemed fair. And that's kind of the situation. They're all trying to figure out what to do.
They have to cede the low ground and like retreat the floodwaters, right? And that's what bothered me so much the last few years is they sat there. Seen that meme with like the guy with the mop and the bucket at the side of the ocean? And he's like, like, you guys have wasted so much time and energy and political capital and 17 hearings. They need to find a way, in my opinion, the single most important thing they can do is find a way to allow some teams on some campuses to deem their athletes employees, either by your breakaway model or some other carve out through legislation that will hold up in court, but still allow other athletes at that school to be volunteers, if you will, student, the more traditional deal, and allow those teams that are employees to play schools, compete against other schools or other teams that aren't employees. So what that would do is preserve the NCAA basketball tournament, which I think should be, if not priority number one, is one of the top two priorities. If Kentucky wants to make their basketball team employees, fine. St. Peter's can't because they can't afford to have all these teams and pay. They're basically a Division III school with a Division I basketball team. They can't afford it. That's fine, too. They should still be able to meet in the same tournament. And I think you can get a lot of political common ground on preserve the NCAA basketball tournament act, right?
Yep.
Who the hell doesn't want to preserve the NCAA basketball tournament?
If they screw that up, it's over.
Right. You want to vote against that one? So you got to let St. Peter play Kentucky. There's no difference if you all of a sudden the Kentucky guys are employees, but it's not even. It wasn't even before. St. Peter's won anyway. So preserve the NCAA basketball tournament and preserve the opportunity for non-revenue sports, particularly women's sports, to still exist on the campus as best that it can. And a distinction between employee and non-employee is not a lack of opportunity. It's a distinction in some pay. I don't know any other employer that has to employ the same amount of men and women, right? The rest of the campus does not have to employ the exact same amount of men and women. Or each department doesn't have to have the same amount of men. Some have more women, some have more men. There's more female students on campus than male students, right? You have to find a way around that. And by allowing some schools to not have employees, you preserve Division II and Division III. I don't think it's the biggest priority, but who the heck want, like, there's no harm in Division III athletics. Let those schools play, let Division II, right? And you basically can let schools determine what who they want to make employees and what they can afford. And if they sit there and say, we can only do football, we only do football. If you say we can only do 50 football players, they only do 50 football players. They want to do men's and women's basketball, but there has to be real discussions about how these things are different. Some sports aren't profitable. Some sports are. There's other value. Like, I saw this, like, there was some kerfuffle about, you know, Ole Miss basketball. Someone pointed out Ole Miss women's basketball lost $8 million a year, and the coach got all mad that it got pointed out. Well, it did. That's okay. Maybe the school wants to have a women's basketball team. There are lots of things on the Ole Miss campus don't turn a profit. Doesn't mean it shouldn't exist. But we can't sit there and still be in this realm where it's like we can't even mention Iowa women's basketball lost money. It's okay. Yeah. There's great value in having Caitlin Clark is in State Farm commercials with Jake from State Farm. Like, I think we're getting some value on the university otherwise. It's okay, but we have to have some real discussions and real leadership, and you have to sit down and say, we need a real small thing. We need this that can beat the courts. And that will save the operation and not spend our time in congressional hearings talking about tampering and collectives giving inducements and all the other garbage. It's just a waste of time. So it's like they have to focus right now. And I don't know who's going to focus. I don't know if this operation is even intellectually capable of focusing.
Well, that's the question. I was talking to actually one of the most prominent former coaches we've ever had in college athletics earlier this week, and his point was, you know, we need to call a meeting of the crime families, basically the five families, i.e. the power conferences, but who even calls the meeting? Like, there's nobody who can corral all the forces and get everybody to think along those lines. The thinking is all just, how do we get out from under antitrust? How do we, you know, not get destroyed in the House lawsuit or the other lawsuits? There's no thought of then what else? What is next? What's the best way to do this? And that's where, you know, shoot, you want to get around Title IX, best thing to do is have football not be part of your university or your university athletic right. department. Then all of a sudden you got no yep. problem with your counters.
But, yep. Well, the thing about getting the five families, or I guess the four families together, which they did get together, you know, last week in D.C. with Charlie yeah. Baker. And then after that meeting, the A4 commissioners, or it was A5 at the time because George Kolobkoff was here. They did meet separately and discuss probably a lot of these issues. I think the real problem is coming to an agreement on these issues. That's kind of been the case for a while, is that even the A5 don't always agree. They don't agree. And you know, everybody's got different resourcing and everybody's got a different mission and geographic kind of cultural ideas and all that stuff. And so they don't necessarily always agree. However, I think that they're starting to come to an agreement, or starting to realize they have to begin gaining consensus. And I think we're starting to get there. And it starts with a solution to settle the house, as I wrote last week, right? It's coming up with a model that will serve as a solution to settle the house case and get protected by a judge there and have it maybe eventually codified by Congress. And they've got to settle on something.
But they're still fighting the, you know, if my son Michael is hit by a bolt of lightning, if I'm a superstitious man, they're still going after Tennessee. And I guess they can be distracted on one side or the other, but it is a, this ship is not pointed in the right direction. Maybe we get there, but somebody's got to be serious. It's too important to keep sitting there with the same old garbage. It's not going to work.
Right.
Well, the thing is, they're going after CFP because guess why? Because partly A5 schools and presidents on these boards have encouraged the NCAA to enforce these rules.
That's why I don't believe that they're serious.
Yeah.
At some point, you got to sit there and say, all right, it's over. And I pledge on my grandchildren, I will not break the peace. Like, it's over. Tennessee got away with it. Mm. We can't keep arguing for guardrails and then sit there and have any understanding that there aren't going to be any guardrails. You're going to lose all of these cases. This is a federal lawsuit. It's going to Kavanaugh. He couldn't have been more clear.
Yeah. No, the when the attorney generals are ready, like, to fire very quickly on this.
They were waiting for this investigation, for the NCAA to tip its hand about the investigation.
Right. Exactly.
And then they let the politicians get a day, and then they came back.
Yeah.
Guys are dead.
This reminds me, and I mean, like, NCAA enforcement, bless their hearts, they are so painstaking about doing what they do and putting together, you know, a notice of allegations. And it's like I'm dating myself here, but Indiana Jones, Temple of Doom, the sword fighter guy that's, you know, got all these fancy sword moves, you know, and he's practiced, and he's a practitioner of the art of the sword fight. Well, what if you're placing a guy with a gun and Indiana Jones just pulls out the gun and shoots you? There is no sword fight. That's what this feels like. It's like, okay, we have worked for months and painstakingly putting together a notice of allegations. Oh, and now everybody, here comes an absolute stampede of pushback. And I don't know whether they were expecting it or know what to do with it.
Yeah, they're doomed. They're doomed. It's antitrust. It's just as clear as day. It's clear as day. All right. Anything else on this, or should we get to some basketball?
I got 90 seconds. What? Right, 60 seconds, maybe.
Go ahead.
I do think it is precious that Dondi Plowman, the president of Tennessee, was congratulating herself and her university on, when we do things wrong, we recognize it and we do something about it. And in this case, we're not wrong. They did so. They recognized it because they wanted to get out of paying Jeremy Pruitt like $14 million or whatever the number was.
13 mil.
Yeah.
So they paid a $6 million fine instead of made 7 mil.
They couldn't catch any of the wrongdoing while it was actually happening. But afterwards, when you need to get rid of the coach, whoa, we got him. We got him. We'll admit it when we're wrong, when it'll help us. Now, no. Anyway, that's all.
Yeah. Yeah. It was precious. Bless their heart.
Yeah.
Bless their heart. All right. It is a huge weekend for college basketball. If you haven't spent that much time watching college basketball, you've been more into the football or NFL playoffs or whatever, just tune in Saturday. I mean, it's about as good as you can get for it's almost like a football Saturday, right?
Yes.
We have got, hold on, let me get all of them, but we have got throughout the day, UConn at St. John's. UConn's number one. Should be rowdy at St. John's. Great game. Houston at Kansas. Is that 4? That's at noon. Houston at Kansas. Big 12 matchup. Number 4 versus number 8. That's at 4. Iowa State's at Baylor at 8. Tennessee, Kentucky is at 8:30. Tennessee at Kentucky, number 5 and 10. And then you got Duke at North Carolina at 6:30. Especially Saturday night, 3 great games, particularly Duke, Carolina, and Tennessee Kentucky's, a bunch of other kind of fascinating games throughout, but you could sit there all day and watch watch college basketball and get up to snuff. I have not followed it enough. It is a very tough season for top 10 teams. I think we're on pace for a record number of top 10 teams to lose. And I don't know, but I wonder if that's NIL spreading the talent out as well. Because like Tennessee's fifth in the country, they got 5 losses. Carolina's got 4. You know, there's a lot of losing going on. It's a much more level playing field, but it can't get a whole lot better than back-to-back Duke, Carolina, Tennessee, Kentucky.
Yeah, it's going to be fantastic. Houston, Kansas, too. I mean, Houston's come into the Big 12 and is bossing people, just like they did in the American Athletic Conference.
I watched them beat the Horns down the other night in OT.
Yeah, yeah, that was a heck of a game. It's wild. Yeah. A lot of stuff happened. But, yeah, it is. It's a really level playing field right now. Usually by now, like, we got a undefeated team maybe still hanging around. Not only do we not have an undefeated team, we don't even have a 1-loss team. It's still January, and the fewest losses anybody has is 2, and that's amongst, 7 teams have 2 losses, including Will Wade's McNeese, whatever they are, Broncos.
and, Cowboys, I think.
Cowboys, okay. You know, some with a horse, and you ride a horse, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. But no, and I would imagine there's NIL as a factor, transfers, you know, people just moving a lot. Yeah. And who can pull together a roster and make stuff work? So it's going to be a fascinating day Saturday. Another underrated game Saturday, Missouri Valley, Drake against Indiana State. They both should make the NCAA tournament. They both should win games in the NCAA tournament. We'll see if the NCAA will let 2 of them in. But I went and saw Indiana State play in person last Saturday. Awesome atmosphere. Best that place has rocked maybe since Larry Bird was there. They shoot the hell out of it. They shoot 41% from 3. They shoot 61% from 2. They shoot a ton of 3s. They play fast. Like, if you just want to watch an entertaining team play an entertaining style, that's 2 teams right there. Drake and Indiana State. Put that also on your Saturday docket.
Ross, I know you love basketball.
I was trying to think how many minutes of college basketball that I've watched.
Well, at least you're not
this season. It would be just very low.
The Duke Carolina game could be at the park down the street from Ross, and he'd read congressional testimony. No,
I have a brief here. Congressional, brief within him, the game.
I'm right in the middle of the basketball kind of like territory too. Yeah, here in the DMV.
Yes, a lot of players, I am very fascinated by Houston, Kansas. Kansas crushed Oklahoma State last night. I watched a little of that, but then I was watching other games. Michigan State was on Peacock.
Yeah,
and, different things. I love Houston. I love Kelvin Sampson. I know Indiana fans recoil at that. They can't shoot a lick, but they just rebound.
It never matters. Matters, man. They're unbelievable. I mean, it is the same team every year.
Yes.
And it's you know, guys. We're going to guard and we're going to rebound and we're going to shove you around. Good luck. Doesn't matter what league they're in, they're doing it. I mean, to go into the Big 12, which is a really good league, they're 6-2 in that. They're 19-2 overall. They're number 1 in the Ken Pomeroy ratings in the nation. It's wild.
Yeah, it really is. They kind of look, it's like the same body types and stuff like that.
Yes.
I swear it's the same high schools. You know, it's like 3 guys from the Houston City League. And then like, you know, a transfer too. Actually, it's a lot of transfers now. But you know, some guy from Stephen F. Austin or something they got, but yeah, they just out muscled Texas the other night. So we'll see if they can do it up there. I mean, they're Big 12 now. Scary, man. Kelvin Sampson. All right, let's do a people's court here. This is a travel nightmare. I'm not even sure how, we'll see if there's a difference of opinion on this ruling. New York Post. An American Airlines plane was reportedly forced to return to the gate due to high wind. A disgruntled passenger's smelly farts. they had to.
New York Post.
The big stink over the flatulent flyer unfolded while our recent flight from Phoenix, Arizona to Austin, Texas was still on the ground, according to a viral Reddit post. Okay. Before most people had boarded, I observed
only the best sources, Dan. Only the best sources. Oh, yeah. Viral Reddit post. Come to the pod for the best sourcing.
Hey, this is a New York Post. Very reputable. Very reputable. Yeah. Sure. I observed this man was audibly disgruntled about something. Maybe hungover. Rough day. I don't know. Hold on. Pop-up ad got me. But as soon as he sat down, he was grumbling about something under breath like effing hell or something. After the majority of passengers had boarded, the man reportedly claimed, "You thought that was rude? Well, how about this smell?" And proceeded to mask out. He's like Babe Ruth. He called his shot.
Yeah, he's like, wait till you see this.
And he's ripping him? Oh, my God.
He called his shot. I don't know what provoked that comment. And while kind of funny to overhear, it was uncalled for. This is the Reddit guy. For especially coming from a grown man on an airplane nonetheless. But the excessively farting passenger's gross behavior didn't end there.
Oh, no.
The man who just purposely farted moments ago decides to loudly and condescendingly say, "Yeah, everybody, let's just eat the smelliest food possible all the time." So was he mad about people bringing food in?
Yeah, people were bringing food and eating it on the plane, like, you know, egg salad sandwich or something.
I have a problem with that. They're like, well, dashing sriracha all over the place. It's like, it's a total, just have a damn kind bar. It's an hour and a half flight to Austin. It's an hour and a half. Okay, so I might be on fart, guys. I don't know. We'll see.
The fart man side.
If a guy in a row over replied, "If you don't like it, you can fly private." To which fart man says, "That's so effing rude." And another person chimes in, "I think we'd all agree you're the rude one here." So the diners are angry. At one point, the flight attendants intervened and told the transgressor, "That's enough." The plane was taxiing to the runway, but it came to a stop. An announcement came over saying, "Apologize for the interruptions. We're returning to the gate. We'll give you more info." We get back to the gate, and a flight attendant comes back and informs us that fart man, that he will be not staying on this flight. He simply replies, "I don't understand." She tells him to talk about it off the plane. The man grabbed his bag and got home. We all breathed a sigh of relief when he was removed. I think most people are on edge.
Breathed a sigh of fresh air.
Some people said he missed his chance. They smell you later. No. All right. So that's the case. Justice 40, who is in the wrong? Fart man or the smelly diners?
Well, all of them. All of them.
Throw them all out.
As has previously been established, I am a bit of an irritable flyer when it comes to people like, you know, taking excessive liberties, like bringing your pets on, including peacocks and horses. But I agree that, look, don't bring your elaborate, intrusive food stuff, okay? Right? That's a problem from an olfactory standpoint, from a slop standpoint, from a room standpoint. And then B, no, you're not allowed to just come on and rip ass whenever you want, all right? That's out too. So you all got to go. All of you have got to go. I am still traumatized to this day. 1992, my wife and I were, she came over at the end of the Summer Olympics, and we took a train, overnight train, from Barcelona to like Nice, France. And we were in a crowded car, and there were a bunch of drunk Frenchmen in there just passing gas at will. If I knew enough French cuss words, it would have been bad, but I didn't. So that was like, I'm traumatized. I respect the trauma that those passengers went through there. None of those behaviors are acceptable. Death penalty to all of them.
Pat, you've been on a flight when somebody brought a horse on board?
I've never been on with the horse, but we talk Flirty the Horse on Flirty our, on the horse.
Yeah, yeah, Chicago to Omaha, which is quite drivable. Was, yeah, they brought a horse on. It was a big one. Wow. It was a big episode. Wow. It was an ongoing saga.
It was a saga.
I had a puppy on. I had a dog on my flight from San Francisco the other day. In my row. It's nice. Just sat there quietly.
It didn't dump on the floor?
No, it didn't. If it did, I didn't know about it.
Okay. Like that one crapped from first class all the way to the back of the plane up and down the aisles.
Ross, thoughts on this?
I agree with Pat. I do need to know what was being eaten. Because if it's like a ham sandwich, okay, that's one thing. If it's like a chicken teriyaki, that really smell, or something like that, you can get some smelly stuff. I was on a plane recently, and I'm racking my head of like what it was they were eating, but it was just terrible. It had like onion, the whole plane smelled like onion. It was rough.
They've improved the restaurants at airports.
So
people now are bringing, but it's, they're much more elaborate meals, exotic. There's a lot of, used to be like a hot dog on a roller, so there wasn't a whole lot there now. But I find the food has gotten out of control. They're sitting down. Like, it's not like those old pictures of the 1950s where they'd be carving up the roast beef. Like, that's not it anymore. And they're putting sauce, and it stinks. Yeah. And there's all stuff all over the place. It's little broccoli bits flying through the air. I'm conflating this, but I swear someone had chopsticks once on a plane I was on. Like,
that's risky.
Let's go with the spork, please. Let's be a little bit more useful. A little bit. They make the spork for a reason. It's very good. It works. Yeah, I know. You can use chopsticks. Congratulations. You're so worldly. This is an airplane. That said, the guy just ripping and running. I respect the call you shot. I respect that he fought back. I kind of do.
Come on now.
I kind of do. He only did one. He stopped.
That we know of.
If he had kept bombing them, absolutely throw them off. But it's like you got to put a little like detente out there.
mutually assured destruction.
This guy's locked and loaded, right? He's like Kim Jong-un. He's got his throw one in the Sea of Japan every once in a while. Let everyone know. Don't mess with the guy in 14B. I don't know. I'm just saying, rude, yes. But I want to hear more.
Is not a vigilante, man. He's a problem.
He's a problem. Throw one in the Sea of Japan.
What do you think there, Sean? What do you think?
I'm a very irritable flyer. I always leave planes with a worse sense of humanity than when I entered them. I almost fought a teammate on a plane because he wouldn't put his chair back up, and then a tight ends coach had to yell at us to break it up. So plain decorum is rough. Everyone just forgets how to mind their own manners, and if somebody next to me is really setting their minds to farting right next to me on a plane, it's going to be some words exchanged between us. Because that's a break of trust. We're all passengers. It's 2 miles in the air, or however high we are in the air. We all need to trust each other a little bit better. And if you're doing that, I can't sit on this plane with
five,
you.
5-6 miles. There is like the human contract, right? Just basic decency amongst the people.
Yes. Absolutely. Sean, philosophy. That's like
no fly list for this guy.
Sean's. Yeah, he's a good justice. I don't know.
He is.
I'm still. I guess I'm just. I just think calling out. What did he say? Wait, what is this? Wait, hold on. I got to see this thing again. You thought that was rude? Well, how about this smell?
And I hope it was a loud one, too. How about this? Perfect timing.
No silent there. Yeah, you got to absolutely
man.
Yeah, he's just got one there in the chamber ready to go. I mean, wow.
He was jacked up, man. He was having a hard time, maybe hungover, rough day. I don't know. You don't know what's going through. You don't know what people are suffering through. It's a mental health crisis in this country, gentlemen.
Yeah, but you know what? No, that the public contract says you cannot take out your mental health crisis in a plane with your gas.
Mm-mm.
You cannot.
All right. Let's just all be more mindful, including you, eater. They, it's not like you're flying halfway around the world here. It's Phoenix to Austin.
Yeah.
Okay.
Keep your food self-contained.
Just something simple. Something simple. Don't need to have some big old elaborate thing. They got good food in Phoenix, though. You know, you want. Anyway, that's our show. We had a review the other day about how we could talk the legal aspects I don't want to out the person who said it to me because he probably doesn't care, but maybe people don't like to admit they listen to us. We're the only pod that can discuss the legal intricacies of what's facing the NCAA and nacho chip vodka. the same. I would say this was probably the only one that did these topics today. The rundown was very unique. So we hope you love it. Appreciate everyone listening, sticking with us the off season. Plenty going on, to say the least. We will be back next week. We'll do our Super Bowl edition. We talk about all the guys in the Super Bowl. We covered them in college. Always good times. And who else? Who knows what else? Who knows who's suing who? Who knows what Tennessee's up to next? Miscreants. We'll talk to you later.